I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that, for the second straight week, is missing its resident diva, Mary Pat Truthart. The good news? We expect her to return soon. Until that occurs, the show, as they say, must go on. As we all have experienced, the past year has been a tough one. One of the things that three of us, and that includes Mary Pat, have done to weather things is to seek out films that either we never had seen or that we had seen but lost track of as the years passed. The best of such movies we call hidden gems or forgotten gems, whatever you want. Before we sign off, we'll also give a short preview of the 2021 Seattle International Film Festival, which this year is going virtual. First, though, let's begin this week's show by mentioning some movies that we both admire without reservation. And let's begin with you, Nathan.
Yeah, so this is my first, I like to call them unseen gems, in a little tip of the hat to my favorite Adam Sandler film. The first one I'm going to bring up is, I mean, you talked about the year being tough and people kind of disappearing into feel-good entertainment. I think this movie is exactly what the doctor ordered on that front. And I'll start with kind of a preamble, because last year the Criterion Collection released a box set called The Complete Films of Agnes Varda. And all of those films are now on their streaming service Criterion channel. And I've been working my way through her career. She was, of course, if people don't know, one of the pioneers of the French New Wave, right along with Godard and Truffaut, but isn't, you know, mentioned in the same breath as them often, but absolutely deserves to be. And she started making features, went into documentaries in her later years, and she just died in 2019 at the age of 90 and just had an incredible career. And the film of hers that I recently discovered and absolutely adored is a documentary she made in 1981 called Murmurs, which is Wall Walls in French. And of course, that has a double meaning. There's sort of a pun going on there. And basically what this movie is a filmed tour guide of all of the murals that were on the sides of buildings in Los Angeles in the early 1980s. And what Varda does is she sort of lets the artists that made these murals kind of explain their intentions and talk about their approaches. And we even meet some of the people that are the subjects of the murals. And so there are just so many interesting people that come through Varda's film. So there's this guy that we get introduced to who's painted this giant portrait of his wife on the side of their house. And she likes to sit out in the front yard right next to it so that people come by and they go, oh, is that you on the side of the house? And then there's also this guy that owns a bridal shop and he wants to have a giant mural of himself and his fiance on the side of the shop. But then his fiance leaves him in the middle of the mural being painted. And so he just is alone on the side of this building in his wedding tuxedo, waiting for a new woman to come into his life so he can paint her next to him. And we also meet a bunch of artists in the Chicano community who kind of talk about the iconography of their murals. She talks to Black artists and Native American artists about how they try and kind of tie their communities together with this public art. And even though this movie, which again is called Murmurs, it's only about 80 minutes long, it is just jam-packed with fascinating people. It has, you know, Varda's narration, which is this kind of wry observationalist humor, because she is something of an outsider to this LA arts community and asks these questions that you would not expect. It was a movie that I had never heard of until recently. And the instant it started, I thought, this is a new favorite movie. More people need to know Agnes Varda in general, but more people need to know this movie specifically.
Right. You know, when you first mentioned this movie, I thought, well, I've never seen that. Then when you started describing it, I thought, well, I have seen that. And then I realized, no, what I was thinking about was her 2017 film, Faces Places, which mm-hmm. is the same kind of concept, but in France, and specializing on one particular artist who puts these murals and paintings up on the sides of barns and everything throughout the French countryside. So to a certain extent, at least in Faces Places, she's returning to a theme that she developed decades before.
Yeah, it's not a remake of Murmurs, but it's almost a reconsideration of the same ideas.
Right.
And within that film, because, I mean, it was basically the last film that that she completed before she died. It's sort of a retrospective of her own career, looking back at all the films that she'd made before that. So they would actually make an amazing double feature. Those are two of the best documentaries that you can see. And again, pretty much everything that Agnès Varda ever made is on the Criterion channel. And I would really hope that people would check her out, because she is fast becoming one of my favorite filmmakers. And the fact that we were taught, you know, the French New Wave with Varda as almost, you know, kind of a footnote in that conversation is outrageous, right? Because she is one of the most important figures in that movement.
Sure. And she was always treated as like a mascot almost of that kind of movie.
Yeah. Which and is- Godard gets way more airtime, but, you know, his career devolved into nonsense as it went on. Varda was good all the way through. So she's got that leg up on him.
Well, when it came to the couple of films that I decided to go with, I was reminded of one just through some research I was doing a couple of weeks ago. But what I decided to do was go with an actor and two of his early films. And the actor that I chose is Bob Hoskins. You know, Hoskins is a guy that we don't really think about now too much. And if people do remember him, they remember him from Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where, you know, he famously is next to the animated character Jessica Rabbit, voiced by Kathleen Turner, whose famous quote is, "I'm not bad, I'm just drawn that way." And, you know, he plays a kind of a jokey, clownish character, which is totally in fitting with that movie. But the movie that really put him on the map after doing some stage work and a lot of television work in England was the 1980 mob film, The Long Good Friday, directed by John McKenzie. He played in a cast with other people. I mean, Helen Mirren is in this movie also. And Pierce Brosnan is in the movie in this little bit part as a member of the IRA. And it, in some ways, it's like your typical mob film. Hoskins plays Harold Shan, a London gangster who has been so successful. I mean, he's just this brutal dude, but he's been so successful that he wants to go straight. It's like Michael Corleone wants to go straight. It's like, you know, the Cillian Murphy character in Peaky Blinders. He's been so successful, he wants to go straight. He wants to get out of it. But he finds it's a lot harder than he ever thought, because he's in the midst of making a deal with a bunch of guys from the American Mafia. He runs afoul of the IRA. And remember, 1980, coming out of the 70s, was still really problem with the troubles over in Ireland. So it ends up, let's just say, it ends up totally violently. And it's got one of the most stark endings of any movie ever, with a camera trained on Hoskins sitting in the back seat. And he knows he's going to his death. And he's just sitting there going, why me? It's almost like Edward G. Robinson at the end of Scarface going, "Dio mio, is this the end of Rico?" It's a terrific movie. And it has 96% tomato meter reading on Rotten Tomatoes. The one thing that I read about this was that Helen Mirren had to fight to expand her role. She was just initially seen as, you know, just the girlfriend, but then she had to fight McKenzie to expand her role so that she could become almost Shan's consigliere. I remember Peter Bradshaw writing in 2015 when it was re-released. He wrote, "Although The Long Good Friday is firmly rooted in a very different era, early 1980s Britain is another country entirely, the film still feels fresh and uncompromisingly tough." And that's absolutely what I would say about The Long Good Friday. It's unlike the movie you chose, Nathan. The Long Good Friday is not an easy watch, and it's not one that you're going to come out and going, "Wow, I'm so impressed about life." No, it's a tough mob movie, and there's no happy ending. It's such a sterling film.
I just looked it up, and it is also streaming on the Criterion channel. So now we've given you two reasons to subscribe to that. I would also say about Bob Hoskins, and I've seen The Long Good Friday, but it's been a long time. And so now that I know it's on this service, I'm definitely going to go back and rewatch it, because you've made me remember the qualities of it. But I want to say about Bob Hoskins, I mean, I think the first thing that I saw him in was Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He's also in Spielberg's Hook. And so I think as a kid, I sort of, you know, equated him with children's entertainment, even though Who Framed Roger Rabbit is right. not, you know, exactly a kid's movie, but it was pitched that way.
Right.
And then to see him in something like The Long Good Friday, where he's, you know, he's the villain of the piece, even though he's also our protagonist, and in a movie that I have a feeling you're going to mention later on, it was just kind of this revelation, like, oh, this guy who I associated yep. with comedy and slapstick and farce and being almost the, you know, the comic buffoon sidekick has these layers that I didn't know. And Hoskins is another one of those guys. He's been in so many great movies. I just rewatched Brazil recently and he has a cameo in that, but he steals his scenes. He's just one of those guys that I think if you just went back through his filmography and just picked random things you'd never heard of, you would see a lot of good stuff.
Yeah. With that, that was our look at a couple of what we refer to as hidden gems, or Nathan has his own name for it. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at a couple of other hidden gems and to give a short view of the 2021 Seattle International Film Festival. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Like most nonprofit organizations across the country, Public Radio has experienced its share of disruptions due to COVID. And yet, here we are, giving you the most recent updates on vaccines, outbreaks, impacts, legal and political implications, and much more. But the impact on our operations is real, and we rely on listeners like you to help us deliver the most relevant and accurate, fact-based information we can. Just as you depend on SPR, SPR depends on you. We can't do it without you. So please go to SpokanePublicRadio.org and contribute today. Thank you.
And we're back. This is Movies 101. I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Nathan Weinbinder and I mentioned a couple of films that we refer to as hidden gems, forgotten gems, whatever. Let's now move to a couple more before giving a short preview of the 2021 Seattle International Film Festival. So take it away, Nathan.
Yeah, so for my next hidden gem title, this is a movie that I saw, I want to say in 2003 or 2004, around the time that it came out on DVD, and absolutely loved it then, and kind of forgot it existed until I saw it pop up on Netflix. And it's a 2003 indie film called Raising Victor Vargas, which was the debut feature by a guy named Peter Sollett, who's probably best known for directing a rom-com called Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. But this movie, it's totally different from that film, even if it has some similar themes, but it's set on the Lower East Side of New York. It follows this Dominican American family, this grandmother matriarch and the three kids that she's raising. And the main character, Victor, is 15 or 16, thinks of himself as this Lothario, and falls in love with a girl of his similar age who has really no interest in him, or at least she projects as if she has no interest in him. And it's sort of about their courtship and how she comes to see that he isn't this kind of strutting peacock that he portrays himself to be, that he's actually this sensitive, vulnerable guy. And it's also about how his insanely strict Catholic grandmother doesn't really want him to have this friendship or relationship at all. She thinks that it's just going to lead to sin and temptation. And so in a way, this is really just kind of a nice little character study. And yet it feels so real. It feels so lived in. It was expanded from a short film that Sollett made and features a bunch of first-time actors, Victor Rasuk, Judy Marte, Melanie Diaz. All of them are still working, but here it's their first films, they're kids, they're teenagers, and they feel so natural. They feel so convincing. And this is one of those movies that just kind of snuck up on me the first time I watched it. And it's just kind of, you know, it's always been in the back of my brain as a film that I loved and need to revisit. And so now it's on Netflix. It's also on Amazon Prime if you don't happen to have Netflix. Again, it's called Raising Victor Vargas. It's just a lovely little movie. It's not sugarcoated. These characters can be cruel to each other. They can be cruel to themselves even. But it's just, this is one of those movies that I hope gets rediscovered because it's really lovely, I think.
Yeah, when you first mentioned this movie to me, I was going, I remember seeing that, but I didn't remember anything about it. And then going back and reading about it, I remember, oh yeah, I really enjoyed that movie. It was straight off the streets of New York, straight off the hot summer streets of New York. And it ends up being a sweet little movie, even though you talked about them being cruel. They're cruel to each other in the way teens are.
And yes, it's completely believable.
The young grandma is uncompromising in her way, but it is a sweet little coming of age film. I wanted to continue with Bob Hoskins. And if it was 1980 that brought him his initial real big fame, international fame with The Long Good Friday, it was 6 years later. And I remember seeing this movie, I'll mention it in a second, at the Lincoln Heights Cinemas. I remember in those days, every once in a while, the Lincoln Heights Cinemas would show in one of its side little theaters alternative films, you know, something other than the big blockbusters that virtually every other theater in Spokane would play. I remember seeing it and then walking out and going, wow, what was that? In fact, I saw this movie before I saw The Long Good Friday, because I saw The Long Good Friday years later on VHS, actually. But in Mona Lisa was directed by Neil Jordan, who 6 years later in 1992 would achieve his biggest fame with The Crying Game. But in Mona Lisa, Hoskins is plays another kind of guy on the wrong side of the law, a low-level gangster just out of prison, who is hired by his former boss, played by Michael Caine, to be the shepherd, the bodyguard, the driver of a young but sophisticated call girl, played by Kathy Tyson. And so you've got this rough guy and you've got this young woman, and at first they kind of clash, you know, because he's just from the streets and she is, we think, you know, from the glam side of the business. But then they start to become close, and then he actually falls in love with her, tries to protect her, and things go this way, they go that, it becomes really a violent film. And it's not the movie that is going to fit in with today's mores, because this is all about George, the Hoskins character, rather than it is about Simone, the character he's following. But I just thought that, once again, if you concentrate on Hoskins himself, this guy can do no wrong. He's just this small fire plug of a guy who is the last person you would ever cast as a leading man, but who steps into the right leading man role and it's absolutely perfect. So I absolutely loved Mona Lisa. It introduced us to Neil Jordan, introduced us to Kathy Tyson. It gave a great co-starring role for Michael Caine. He just is just such a bad guy. And Hoskins is terrific. I
got an Oscar nomination for
it. Which, yes, you know. In fact, he won a Golden Globe. He won a BAFTA, all for Best Actor. And then he was Oscar nomination, but he lost out to Paul Newman, who won
The Color of Money.
Yeah,
right.
Which is wrong. He should have won it for The Verdict, but hey, another story.
And we should say that Mona Lisa, which I agree with you, is a terrific movie, though I have not seen that in a long time. It's on HBO Max. And again, the Criterion Channel.
Right.
I might have to do a Bob Hoskins Film Festival on your recommendation.
There we go. So those are our hidden gems. What were you going to tell us about the 2021 Seattle International Film Festival, Nathan?
Oh, yeah. So we want to let people know that SIFF is happening this year, but you don't have to travel all the way to the other side of the state to attend. It's virtual this year, and it starts on April 8th and runs through the 18th. And here's how it works. Most of the films in the lineup are going to be available on demand during the festival window, so from the 8th to the 18th. And if you go online to SIFF.net, you can look through their online guide. You can sift through genres and tones and styles to figure out what you want to watch. If you do see something you want to see, double check to make sure it will be available that whole window, because some of these films do have restrictions, like they're only going to be available for a couple of days, or they're only available for viewers in Washington State. So just keep an eye out for that. But I want to flag up some movies that I'm going to be checking out. And I'll start with a movie that is going to be available through the entire festival, I believe. It is called All Those Small Things, and it is partially set in Spokane. Yay.
Ooh, yeah.
And it stars James Faulkner, who is most famously on Game of Thrones, as a British game show presenter who gets a fan letter from someone in our neck of the woods and decides to follow it. I'm really curious to see what that movie's about and to see any Spokane landmarks I might be able to recognize. Another one called Mogul Mowgli, the new film from Riz Ahmed, who was recently nominated for an Oscar for Sound of Metal. And he plays a rapper in this movie who has aspirations of stardom, but then he comes down with some kind of autoimmune disorder and sees, you know, his trajectory start to fall. Sounds a little familiar. It kind of sounds like a nice spiritual cousin to Sound of Metal. Let me also run down some of the documentaries that are going to be at the festival. There's a lot of them this year, and the titles are pretty self-explanatory about what the subjects are. So you have Amy Tan, Unintended Memoir, about the author, of course. Rita Moreno, Just a Girl Who Decided to Go for It. Truman in Tennessee, An Intimate Conversation. The Truman in Tennessee being Capote and Williams, of course. Street Gang, How We Got to Sesame Street, which I need some more Muppets in my life, so I'm definitely going to check that one out. And then a movie called In the Same Breath, which has played at a couple other festivals and is about the COVID outbreak in Wuhan and how the Chinese government handled it, or rather didn't handle it in some cases. So that's kind of a bummer, but if you need to level it out, that's a good choice. And then another one I should call out with another Spokane connection. This is a movie that we've talked about on the show previously, but if you missed it at the Spokane International Film Festival, you can now see it at SIFF. And that's Super Frenchie, which was directed by Chase Ogden, who of course is a Spokane filmmaker and is about a base jumper. It's sort of a free solo.
Girard, yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of a free solo style documentary. So acrophobes need not apply, but that's a fun movie if you can handle it, if you don't have vertigo. So again, that's just some movies out of, I think, nearly 100 that are on the docket this year. So go to SIFF.net. You can buy individual tickets. You can buy festival passes. Again, that's running from April 8th to the 18th.
If you're listening to this on Friday night, it already began. If you're listening to it on Saturday, it began 2 days ago, but it
runs. But you've got plenty of time.
Yeah, plenty of time. Plenty of time. Anyway, that was our short preview of the 2021 Seattle International Film Festival, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbender and I discussed a few films that we think would make a good streaming watches. We expect our partner, Mary Path Truthart, to return next week. Until then, let's thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you, too, our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from India-born author Amit Kalantri. People never forget two things, their first love and the money they wasted watching a bad movie. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.